If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to Sentimental Garbage, the podcast where we talk about the disgusting cretins we truly are. My name is Caroline and it's not a spot, it's a cyst. Joining me is ingrown hair expert Nicola Dynan.
Hello.
Hi. I have never felt like I need to do less research for an episode because the research began when I was born.
And was
disgusting, and now it's carried on for 33 years, wherein I am even more disgusting.
I did try to do some research. Like, I'm not even joking. I went on JSTOR and typed in yuckiness into the search bar and got no results. And I was like, okay, I'm just going to have to wing this.
Okay, so how would you define what we're doing today, yuckiness?
So I think we're talking about the fascination we have with the yucky. Mm-hmm. And for me, that manifests in an obsession with ingrown hairs, blackheads, bodily fluids, just all of this stuff which we're told to hide.
Yes.
That I think has just created this taboo that I can't look away from. You know, as soon as I had access to YouTube, I was watching blackhead extractions. And, you know, and back in like the 240p days, like really low frame rate, so blurry. And now it's way more sophisticated.
Oh,
but
yeah.
As long as I can remember, I've been so interested in the stuff that comes out of a person's body.
Yes. Oh my God. I need to tell the listeners on how we landed on this. So we met a couple of months ago at the Book Bar Christmas signing thing, which is like a very non-Londoners. Book Bar is a very like chic little North London bookshop where cool ladies buy the cool books. And we were next to each other in this little signing table. I was telling you about the podcast. I was asking if you were interested because you off the bat just seemed like a really interesting person. And you're like, oh, how about Real Housewives? I was like, oh, we've got one in the works. What else? And then you just paused for a minute. You went, blackhead videos? And I was like, oh, my sister.
I think actually you were like, oh, do you like the earwax too?
Yeah.
And you said, I'm so into the crocodile forceps.
Oh, yeah. And the Jobson horn.
Oh, the Jobson horn, of course. Yes.
And once you know that, like, someone hasn't just, like, you know, been on TikTok a bit late and seen a few things, they've actually gone deep into it and they, on some private level, define a huge part of their personality by how they are fascinated by this, but wouldn't really tell everyone.
If they know the Jobson horn. And also, you know, when they bring out the Jobson horn, it's serious because ideally when you're removing earwax, you use the suction thing.
Yes, yeah.
Because otherwise you might tear skin. Mm-hmm, but if it's really stuck in there and it's just got to be, you know, it's a big lump, you got to go with the Jobson horn.
The Jobson horn. Thank you for explaining that because not everyone will know what the Jobson horn is.
You're probably going to get loads of emails from all the audiologists who listen to this podcast being like, that is incorrect information. That is not.
Please.
Do not listen to her. That is not when you use the Jobson horn.
We're using context clues. I feel like I pay very good attention when the audiologists are narrating those earwax videos. I think I've learned a lot. But like, I want to also put a sort of a slight content warning in that, like, I know this isn't everyone.
Yeah.
But I do know it's a lot of people because I've been in the comments at 3 a.m. and it's a lot of people. And for people who maybe blood, pus, sweat, tears, BO, you know, discharge, poo, like, any of that stuff, if this isn't for you, like, I'm not going to apologize after this point. You need to switch the podcast off and wait till next week. But everybody else who remains, hello and welcome.
Welcome.
Like, I okay, where to begin? I guess, like, the biggest sort of revelation of, like, finding out that, like, not everyone, like, that this isn't just, like, a private niche thing, that this is a big enough thing that, like, oh, this is something we're all ingesting but not talking about, is the arrival of Dr. Pimple Popper.
Yes, I think that is the first time you know, where it just didn't feel like it was filmed on a Nokia brick, where it felt like good production, and you were seeing these like millions of views, you know, all sort of eyes open for the removal of a dilated pore of Winer.
The dilated pore of Winer. It's not a blackhead. It's a dilated pore of Winer.
It's like a plug. It's insane.
Yeah.
And it's so fascinating to watch. And it's such a clean removal. It's personally my favorite. Mm. But watching these videos and seeing that there are like 3 million people watching alongside of you. And she became so viral so quickly.
Yeah.
You know, she's been around. She has her own TV show now.
Yeah.
But even in the early days of her YouTube, it just escalated to an incredible viewership so quickly.
Totally. And she's become sort of like the dominant, the person, like probably the most famous dermatologist in the world.
No, definitely.
At the point where I was like listening to interviews with her today, like her being like, she's a very respected dermatologist. She's like been in like all these medical journals. She's had all these important residencies, but she has become known globally as Dr. Pimple Popper. And I think also what Dr. Pimple Popper has done is that like she hasn't created something out of thin air. Like there's always been this taste for bodily yucky grossness on TV, and something you brought up was embarrassing bodies, which is like an early noughties thing. But what she has done is like she's giving us the procedure, she's giving us these clean sterile environments where she digs out the little coal lump of the pore of Winer and then she seeps out all the pus and you're like
and she sews it up really neatly. But the thing I think is most important about I think her name's Dr. Sandra
Lee.
Sandra Lee.
Yeah.
Is her bedside manner.
Yes.
And before, you know, the videos I was watching, it was like popping the cyst on my boyfriend's back, you know, like done with like bare hands, dirty nails. but also, you know, people kind of gawking at it. And I think what she's managed to achieve is like put on a public platform this very like kind approach to things that people are often embarrassed about in themselves.
Yeah.
And it's just so refreshing.
It really is, because she has everything from like someone with like an enormous cyst on like their neck and where all you can do is sort of like grieve the American healthcare system that has allowed someone to walk around like this. And she sort of, you know, what I'm assuming is providing them a free service to someone who doesn't have a lot of money in exchange for them being featured on her TV show, which shouldn't be how the world is.
Yeah, we shouldn't have to exchange our privacy for basic things like healthcare.
But I still, the removal of a cyst, but I'm glad we have it.
But I'm still, I do think that she is a net positive in even in that space. And it's really nice to... And, you know, I was saying earlier, before we started recording, that I, as research, had watched 2 episodes of Embarrassing Bodies. Mm-hmm. I watched Embarrassing Bodies, the reboot, season 9. And for those who don't know, I only learned this yesterday, there was a 2022 reboot of Embarrassing Bodies, the show having sort of stopped in 2015. Mm-hmm. And the tone of the 2022 one was so kind. And it was covering everything from, you know, rough sex, really difficult discussions about... Oh, I took some notes on the things that they talked about. Anal bleeding, side effects of taking NOS, why women might miss smear tests if they're worried about the appearance of their vagina. Mm-hmm. And they had an artist paint all of these different shapes of vulva. Mm-hmm. And it was so much about normalizing things that we might feel ashamed about in our own bodies. Whereas when I watched the something from season 4, which must have been from early 2010s, like maybe even 2010, it was so gawky and it was really uncomfortable to watch. I was just saying it sort of opened with the 3 doctors walking on a beach on Spain, being like, we're on the hunt for the most embarrassing bodies on the beach. And I was like, what? And that's just the appetite that we, you know, that's a diet of kind of conversation around body that we were brought up with.
Yeah.
And I actually think part of the reason I'm so fascinated with things like pus, blackheads, et cetera, is because I was brought up in a diet of these TV shows, environments that were made, that made me feel quite ashamed about things in my body. And so suddenly these things become quite taboo and exciting and I can't look away.
Well, this is, I'm kind of fascinated if it's a kind of a nature versus nurture of what makes a yucky girl.
Yeah.
So, forgive the question, how many siblings do you have?
So I have 2 older sisters.
Okay. I have three older siblings.
Yeah.
I wonder if being the youngest is part of it, because I think I would, like, you growing up in a house with lots of, you know, people in it, there's a lot of bodily just overlap on everyone. It's like, you know, some 4-year-old has shit their pants and now the knickers are floating in a basin in the kitchen kind of thing, because they're soaking out. Or like my sister jumping on my brother's back to squeeze out his blackheads. Like, there's a lot of just like overlap. We were just kind of that sort of family, really.
Interesting. So my mum is an extremely clean woman. I like to think that me and my sisters are quite clean as well, but I do think deep down, my mum thinks the three of us are disgusting. And there's a, as in, she just doesn't think we will never clean to an adequate standard around her. As much as she loves us, she thinks we're a bit gross.
Yes.
Which I don't think anyone would look at me and be like, she's gross, like she's dirty. But my mum does.
Well, this is interesting, yeah. Because there's the thing of, you know, we live in a world of contrast of like, if you are someone who's like your mother, for example, obsessively clean, or like yourself, I'm sure lots of people out of curiosity will look at your Instagram page after they hear you on this episode and they'll see a very glamorous person in like with like beautiful skin and clean hair and an outfit. And like, you know, they're not going to see a yucky girl.
Well, that's what's so interesting. It's like where, because we were discussing, oh, even when we were sat on that bench at the book signing, whilst people were waiting for their books to be signed, having a conversation between us about how yucky we were. You know, we both said that we feel like we're clean, but with a yucky core.
Yes.
And I was like, where does this belief in my yucky core come from?
Yeah.
And I feel like a lot of the work that I've, in preparation, I've done for this podcast is interrogating. Where does that yucky core come from? Like, why is it that despite being like a clean person?
Yeah. You're glowing right now.
Oh, thank you. It's because I was also saying I was so worried that this podcast was going to be filmed.
And I would never ever
and I've
do
been,
that.
I've been bamboozled before where I've showed up to a podcast not prepared for it to be filmed and it was filmed. But there's this real feeling that I have a yucky core, and it's, you know, I've been thinking, okay, well, why do I feel like I have a yucky core? Like, what does that stem from? And I think there is sort of a sense of nature about it. I think I'm quite an anxious person. So I think I'm always worrying about things like cleanliness. And I think that entails a worry about being, you know, yucky.
Yes, because therefore a fascination with
yucky. Yeah, because if you think about it, conforming to so much of what we consider to be, you know, acceptable and beautiful involve some form of confrontation with the yucky in the way that we squeeze and we pluck and we do all of these things to tame our bodies. We have to kind of very much confront the yuckiness that's there in order to prune it, just so that no one else can see it. So there's this sort of weird inherent hiding and belief in our inner yuckiness.
100%. And I also, like, I had this thought, you know, been thinking about this episode for a few weeks now, and I went home recently and I went through all my parents' old photo box and like pictures of them hanging out with their friends, and in the nicest possible way, all attractive people, but they're ugly. Like, as in term, not ugly, that's mean, as in like bad perms, shit dresses, like not much makeup, or if they are wearing makeup, it's like kind of smeary eyeliner at a smoky dinner kind of thing, or like a resort. And thinking that, like, oh wow, like I use sort of 6 products on my face just for skincare. And then there's my makeup bag, which is full. And I'm living in this era where, like, as soon as you can think of something that's wrong with you, they've already made a product for it.
Exactly. Or before you can even think about something that's wrong with you, you get told about a product that makes you think that there is something wrong with you.
I got a press release recently about sleep lines. Do you know about these?
What are sleep lines?
I shouldn't even tell you.
Are they like, oh, is it like when you sleep like on your side and then like pushes your face?
Oh, so no, we have
I've been on that.
We have silk pillowcases and face yoga for that. Yes. No, a sleep lines. Yeah. Let me see. It's if you're sort of if you sleep on your side, if you've got tits and they sort of like slope together and then create a kind of line down your chest.
Okay.
It's like a nothing problem. It's like so not a fucking problem problem.
Wow, okay.
But they have a remedy for it. There is an oil. Like, it's mad.
Oh my God. Or like a breast reduction. Like, what? That's so mental to me. And I remember being on TikTok and learning about the phrase hip dips. And I still...
What the fuck is that?
I think it's when you have like a dip in your hip, which is just maybe the shape of a body.
Right.
And now people are like, oh my God, my hip dips are so bad.
Do they mean like your waist?
No, I think they're like around your thighs. Like they sort of dip a bit.
Oh, kind of like a dimpled sort of thing.
Yeah, it's a bit, uh-huh. bit sort of in the shape. But like, it's like, honestly, it's something I would have never, ever thought of. And now I see videos about girls talking about their hip dips. And I find it astonishing that it's just sort of created.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I mean, so much that there's so much profit over shame. And I think maybe a lot of us have this sense of a yucky core.
Yes.
And that's what all of this buying, and trying to, you know, fix and ameliorate these things that we think are wrong with us is born out of that sense of the yucky core. But why I love those videos of the pimples, the blackheads, is that they feel like a real release. Like it feels so cathartic.
Yeah.
It really does. Yeah, it just feels like you're lifting the hood and enjoying it.
In the smallest possible way, in the like microest possible form, you are watching a play. You're watching tension and release.
Yes, exactly.
It's like you're watching this thing. You sort of, you know, an average video, let's say it's in a sterile setting, you'll sort of see the horrible blackhead or the cluster of blackheads or the cyst or whatever. You'll sort of like see that there's like tension and weight behind the skin. Mm-hmm. You'll be like, that's going to be big. And then the pushing and then just tension building and building. And then you realize you've stopped breathing and your mouth is open. And then you see
throat dry
and then all this stuff comes out and it's like, ah, yes, you've built the tension.
Yes, and then sometimes you think the cyst is done, and then the cyst is not done. And then there's always the final act of the removal of the sac, because if you don't remove the sac, it's going to recur.
It's always just like, it's so weird when you meet someone who is in the same corners of the internet that you are also in. It's like you've gone to the same school in a weird way. You're like, oh, did you have that teacher
same
too?
Same hometown, yeah. Yeah, Miss Sandra.
Miss Sandra. She's strict but fair. Mm. Oh, fuck. But yeah, it always like relates back to the personal, I guess. Like I have a spot today.
Oh, I didn't even notice.
She's concealed.
Should we pop it now?
So you did. I was like, I had the whole conversation with myself in the mirror. Like, I'm not going to pop it today because I don't have any of those little spot patches. Mm. I'll have nothing to cover it with and then I'll just get worse. And then what did I fucking do? But popped it.
I have stopped popping, especially I learned recently about the triangle of death.
What is that?
So it's the triangle that starts, so I think between your eyebrows on your forehead.
Oh, yes.
Down to the corners of your mouth.
Uh-huh.
And basically,
so your whole face.
So so a good chunk of your face to avoid, but includes all the nose area and sort of beneath the eyes. And you basically want to never pop a pimple in that area because there are loads of, I think, arteries that go to the brain. So if there's an infection in that area, then the vessels can, you know, take the infection to the brain, and you can die.
Oh,
yeah. As is why the triangle of death is named. Yeah. So never. I was going to keep that to myself because it didn't feel too relevant. But I'm like, the more people know, the better.
That is a public service, actually.
Yeah.
You're welcome, Dr. Sandra Lee. Well, this is on my chin, so we're okay.
Yeah, you're good.
We're
good. Pop away.
I think because like I have this, like, it's actually in a good place at the moment, but I go with phases of acne, and I kind of always have, like, sometimes I have like huge cystic spots, like all over my neck in particular, and a lot of it's hormonally related, and like I just spend so long battling this thing and thinking about it so much, and also that thing of like feeling, and I know this is like so, I sound like a fucking 12-year-old when I say this, but like feeling like I am 33 years old. I have a media job in London. I am not, I'm like thinking of cancelling our dinner because I have spots. Do you know what I mean? And I feel so vulnerable and so frail and so.
Do you get taken back to that, like that teenage version of yourself?
Yeah. Which is, I guess, where this all begins, right? Mm-hmm. Like, is the teenager. Something that you said when we were planning this was like, and it really spoke to me, was that thing of, when you are hitting puberty, because I feel like if I think of hygiene throughout my entire young life, it's like you think of like taking a bath with your brother when you're three, you know, or whatever, and which is a memory that exists kind of almost through VHS and like home movies, and that's sweet and wholesome and being clean after shower. Then there's that phase between sort of like 7 and 12 where I don't really remember anything about hygiene at all. You're just sort of existing and floating around and on a skateboard and you have a plaster on your knee kind of thing.
Yeah.
I don't remember anything about washing during that phase. Not to say that I didn't, just that I don't remember it.
Ew.
Ew. And then suddenly, from sort of 11, 12 onwards, it being this new responsibility that no one explicitly says to you that you must shower much more than you ever have before, which takes time and is boring, so you don't want to do it. And then you have to dry afterwards, and there's never a towel because you've got so many siblings.
Yeah.
And then there's deodorant, and then, like, you know, there's little skin
and
spots.
And there's things like shaving that people start doing.
Right.
And it's this, like, constant feeling of, like, catching up when you're younger.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's stopped now that it's like, oh, my God, you're not on tretinoin. Or, you know, it's like all this stuff where suddenly someone tells you there's something you should have been doing with your body that you haven't been doing for how many years?
Yeah. Yeah, it's like that episode of Sex and the City when Carrie is the only person who doesn't back up her hard drive.
Yeah.
Or like, you don't back up.
But so how do you, you know, with those experiences with things like cystic acne, when you watch those pimple popping videos, like what's the feeling for you?
Everyone's a freak. Which I know is something like a guidance counselor or your mother or a nurse would tell you.
It's like, yeah, it feels like something that would come out of like a Pink song.
Such a Pink song. You can literally see her doing a backflip on stage in Sydney being like, everyone is just a freak now. I'm a freak with...
Have you seen videos of her shows?
Yes.
It's like insane. They're like so many strings. She's flying. Like Pink's going to space.
Pink's going to space. Why would I only ever hear a Pink song when I'm in a taxi in Central Europe?
Oh, so true, actually. Pink is big there.
Pink's big,
big
there.
Big Pink fans.
I think people have in the past requested Pink as a subject, but I'm like, I don't know if I could talk about Pink with respect. Anyway.
Yeah, put some respect on that name. So if it's that feeling of everyone's a freak, did it feel like that when you were growing up as well?
Yeah, it really did. And God, this is a bit, you know, this is quite therapy now. But I had this so as I mentioned, there's four of us. My next oldest brother is 18 months older than me.
Yeah.
And like, I feel like puberty hit me like a ton of bricks and it hit him like a sack of gold. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
He just like shot up overnight. Like, you know, he was just one of these kids who just
eating what he wants.
He's eating what he wants. His like skin wasn't that bad. And he was just one of these people, these kids who was just like quite comfortable talking to people his own age and adults. He was really popular. He like shagged half my class.
Oh my God, that's awful.
It's awful.
I'm so sorry.
It was so but the thing is, I like, you know, and that is that thing of like, you know, girls trying to befriend you because they want to shag your brother.
Oh my God, I just have two older sisters and they're 4 and 6 years older than me. So
it never really affected you in that way.
But that sounds awful.
It was awful. And like, I felt like he was the River Phoenix and I was the Joaquin, you know, I was the hair-lipped awkward one who now went on to make good art movies. But at the time, you know, whatever. And he died in the Viper Room. I felt yucky in general because I was 12, but also yucky in comparison to my 14-year-old brother who everybody wanted to hang out with.
Yeah.
And so that sort of like just, I guess, deeply entrenched itself even more. But then I sort of credit it with kind of my entire personality, really, because it's sort of the more yucky you feel, the more internal you become, the more you think, the more you write, the more you read.
That's so true.
Are all writers yucky?
Yeah, well, maybe I think all writers have a strong intrigue and yuckiness. I think that's often what makes, you know, a good book, like lifting the lid on human nature.
Yeah.
Which is often yucky.
So this is an interesting thing because and it's kind of taken us quite fluidly onto literary stuff, because there is like an increase in yuckiness in the kind of millennial lady fiction.
That's very true.
Yeah.
Yeah, I often think and reflect about how Atessa Moshfegh.
Yes.
Is that how you say her surname?
That's how I would say it, yeah.
So how she sort of roped in all of these, like, all of these women with my year of rest and relaxation, which is quite like a sexy, like, rotting book.
Yeah.
And then she released, like, Latvona, where it's just loads,
like, medieval
peasant novel where there's lots of shit flinging. And I respect that game.
I really respect it.
But then even in my year of rest and relaxation, if I remember correctly,
yeah,
the narrator shits in an art gallery.
Yes. There's a lot of yucky stuff.
Yeah, so there's even sort of, a willingness to engage with those things like bodily fluids.
Yes.
And it doesn't feel particularly taboo. I do think, and I may, maybe this is one for later, but, you know, could... I think part of what made the shitting in an art gallery exciting, maybe for broad readership, was the fact that the narrator was this thin, hot, blonde, white woman. Mm-hmm. And so, oh, so scandalous.
Yeah.
And, you know, I wonder if it would have elicited the same sort of response had it been someone of a different background.
Yeah.
But I do see an uptick in yuckiness in books, for sure.
Huge uptick.
Do you feel like your writing is ever yucky?
That's interesting. I have, I had a yucky scene in my second book, which was about like a character who's incredibly hungover, and then while they're hungover, finds out something terrible.
Yeah,
and they're also in the rural countryside and has to sort of gets diarrhea in a fuchsia bush, and it's not played for laughs. Really, it's like something that really annoys me about hangovers in books is that people are always vomiting. Like,
yeah.
I don't vomit
a lot. No, I can't remember I don't think I've ever vomited hungover.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that mean right, it annoys action, me. Yeah,
the action's not in the mouth at that point.
No. Yeah, if I'm ever going to get sick, it'll be because I'm drunk, but not because I'm hungover.
No, exactly.
Really. That felt important to me. What's the yuckiest you've ever gotten in your books?
So I don't know if my books are necessarily yucky. I had a dinner. So Eliza Clark, who wrote Boy Parts and Penance, she and I did an event together in November. And she was a good way through my book. But we had dinner together. And she was like, she asked me if I had IBS.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, how do you know? And she was like, it feels quite like obvious from your book.
Wow.
She was like, there's a lot of poo in your book. And it's not it's not quite like Latvona where people are throwing shit. Mm-hmm. But it's just, I just write, you know, in the scenes when the characters are thinking, it's like, oh, I went to go do a poo.
Yeah.
Or they're, you know, they've taken a pill and they're sort of coming up a bit. And it's like, oh, gotta go take a shit.
Yeah.
And I talk about poo and those things quite freely, because I just see them as like a very ordinary part of life.
Yes.
That's completely okay to include in a novel. I also have IBS, and I think so much of, you know, growing up, my focus has always been on my stomach. Mm-hmm. And I have had so much attention to that I think naturally it just filters in to my work.
Of course, of course. Like, I don't have full-blown IBS, but I definitely have this sort of, like, you know, my stress is related to my stomach in a big way.
Yeah, same. But I've done hypnotherapy.
How did that go?
Well, I paid £100 for an app, and I do it 15 minutes 5 days a week for 6 weeks, and honestly, it basically fixed my stomach.
No.
I'll send it to you. It's amazing.
Please.
And then now I do a top-up session once in a while, and it's really helped to calm everything. Because I'm quite an anxious person, I think my stomach is very informed by my mood. So when I'm having a flare-up, it's because I'm going through a stressful time.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I have friends like that in my life. It's a thing of, like, well, for example, if we're all planning a group holiday as a group or whatever, and they're naturally anxious and also have IBS, and the anxiety affects their IBS, and they have to sort of think about, like, okay, well, that'll be five of us in a place with one bathroom.
Yeah.
And I will be thinking about that all the time, and then it will flare up my IBS, and there will be kind of this sort of natural cycle. And, like, of course, if you're someone who's, like, an artist and thinking about that, it's just this constant thing. Again, I guess it's, like, it's just fixation, really, isn't it? You know?
No, exactly. It's so funny. The hypnotherapy, so much of it's like, you're not thinking about your stomach. You're on the swing. swinging freely, not a care in the world, not thinking about what you're eating. It's very, very sweet. And it works.
Oh, I'm delighted for you. That's great.
I think it has helped, like, disconnect sort of that constant worry. But I think this that sort of aspect of yuckiness comes up in my work a lot. But I also think, you know, I've said that a lot of my own feeling of yuckiness is to do with maybe this feeling of having to hide it.
Yeah.
Or, you know, that feeling of having a yucky core. And I think a lot of my work deals with a sense of belonging. I've noticed that in my first novel with, where characters are really trying to understand their identity and who they are. And also my second novel, you know, the lead character of which is a trans woman who's just turned 30, so is sort of 30, 31, and is really struggling to reconcile the ways in which she's assimilated into heteronormativity. And so there's this, like, sort of anxiety about belonging that I think sort of sits atop, you know, a lot of that feelings of the ways in which we feel yucky, because we're just, you know, hygiene historically has been such a strong way through which to, like, exclude people.
Yes.
And you see that in, like, the more, I was about to say gentle, but not gentle, because when you endure at school any form of exclusion on the basis of, like, hygiene, of, like, oh, you don't shave this, you don't shave that, or
you have BO or whatever.
It's horrible. It's not gentle, but then you have the more extreme forms where, you know, you have notions of, like, racial hygiene.
Yeah.
You know, coming up at the start of, like, the 20th century that ultimately sort of was very embedded in eugenics.
Yeah.
And so, you know, this notion of hygiene has always, and cleanliness has in a lot of people's mind always felt like a morally justifiable way of excluding people.
Yes.
And so for those of us who want to belong or who have anxieties around belonging, and I think, you know, my experience as a trans person and also the transness of the characters in my novels are very, very informed by that experience. So I feel like they all kind of maybe share that same sense of a yucky core that I do.
Yeah. Is there like an aspect to like transness in literature as well, that it's like you're talking.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Talking a lot about, like, the body in
the
general
body,
and the body betraying you and the lack of safety if your body betrays you.
Know, exactly. It's like, again, you know, that lack of safety, and, you know, you have these ideas. And I've been thinking about this a lot with, you know, maybe this parallel between what we're talking about with yuckiness and this idea of passing, you know, this idea of transitioning in a way where you fit in without being noticed, and the ways in which that is sometimes lambasted, because it's like, no, you're upholding ideals of we have to conform. But, you know, the very material ways in which it really matters to people to be able to belong and feel safe.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, it's a very fair thing to want.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you look at a lot of trans literature, I'm just thinking that the most obvious examples, maybe, you know, Detransition Baby, it's very focused on, like, the ways in which we feel our bodies limit us. And then again, I'm just thinking of this book that's just come out called Brainworms by Alison Rumfitt as well. And that, again, is body horror.
Yeah.
But it feels very intertwined with the trans experience in a way, you know. And I find it interesting how a lot of trans writers do seem to really focus on the body, you know, whether it's through, you know, more abstract forms of horror or in very sort of realist fiction, which is more what I write about the ways in which we feel quite constricted by them.
Yeah, I'm thinking as well of Paul Takes the Form of a Mortal Girl, where so much of the, which was kind of like a magical realism novel about someone's, like, body sort of morphing and changing and stretching and clothes bursting. And it's just a brilliant novel. But it made me think as well, obviously, that's a theme in trans literature, but maybe it's a theme in the body and how it rejects us, and body horror mm-hmm. has become more and more common in literature generally, because like it's like we have to, because our culture has become so visual mm-hmm. in a way that it just never has been before. Like me talking about my parents and their friends on the holidays in the 70s and me seeing like the two photographs that exist of that. That's yeah. you know what I mean? Versus we are, you know, on Instagram, etc. And we're so expected. Like you and I are both writers and I'm a podcaster. There's really mm-hmm. no reason for anyone to know what I look like, but there is an expectation that I show them. You know,
yeah,
but I mean, for you as well, like even magazine spreads and everything.
Yeah,
you
know? Well, I mean, I find that I think particularly for like women writers,
yeah.
now there is this sort of expectation, or I think I've just noticed sort of a trend of like young women writers being given like photos and yeah. newspapers and. They're the ones who are focused on as being sort of the more exciting writers.
Yes.
And that's not to discredit any of these writers at all.
No.
Because, the work's incredible. But and I think what's being put out at the moment is of really high quality. But I do think, you know, that fascination with youth and beauty does not elide the literary scene.
No. No.
It's disappointing in a way. It's like,
we should be better than this.
Yeah. And, you know, I'd had experience doing modeling jobs and it put an enormous amount of pressure, even in my late 20s, on my body. Mm. And so I thought when all of that ended that would just stop. But I don't, but I still feel a little bit of that pressure, even being a writer, which is supposed to be so isolated and away from other things. Yeah. I still feel like people are looking at the way that I look in a public forum and making judgments, and I find that I internalize that in a way that I don't think people would expect authors to.
Right, and because it's so funny because I thought we were coming and talking about blackhead videos, we're actually talking about like
it's getting deep.
It's getting very Roland Barthes in here. Yeah. It's like the more you are thinking in any sense about how you're being perceived, the less you are able to just exist in your environment and observe what's around you, because you're observing what's happening internally, and that just makes for worse writing.
No, definitely.
You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it is fact, because like, if somebody, you're right, the kind of fascination in literature, culture right now of, you know, young, beautiful female
the
authors,
literary it girl.
The literary it girl. Which I, again, find fascinating because so much of how modern how books right now are being put out there is that the onus is on the author to be their own, create the work, but also be their own marketing department.
Yes.
And their own publicist, and to go to parties and talk to people and be on their podcast. You know what I mean? Like, you know, like, and that sort of rewards people who are able to make the work, but who are also able to, you know, schmooze, which I count myself as one of those people. Do you know what I mean? I don't think I would be able to sell the copies that I've sold if I didn't have a podcast and also be able to meet people. You know what I mean?
It's I definitely, like, I'm down to schmooze. Like, and, you know, you've got to do it. And but it's sort of, it does feel like it, I don't know. I think people's maybe views of the sort of literary profession is that it's quite hallowed and maybe exempt from the culture of narcissism that otherwise pervades, you know, basically every other area of life, but it very much feels the same.
Yeah I don't know if you're fascinated by this era at all, but for me, I love looking on like YouTube and like 70s interviews of like public intellectuals where it's like John Berger or Bob Hughes or like just people in like a brown studio smoking and talking about Martin Amis's last book. Do you know what I mean? And there's like a real yuckiness to those interviews because they're like sort of people who aren't, you know, TV ready, who are on TV, but they're on TV because they're saying great stuff, you know, and in long form, you know. And I love that.
Rather than speaking in like TikTok sound bites.
Yeah. And I now realize that podcasts are the new 70s talk show. They're just audio, which is nice. But yeah, we've gotten all over the map there. But you mentioned modeling. And with that, I would like to bring us to America's Next Top Model.
Oh, I love America's Next Top Model. I just... I just love that show.
Did you follow it all the way through? I think I stopped about season 9, maybe.
I watched till the bitter end. So I even watched the season where, for some reason, Rita Ora was the host.
Well, it's so camp that Rita Ora has become the figure that she's become. Do you know what I mean?
I know. It's sort of one of those things where it's just sort of happened and we all accept it. And no one really questions.
Something that Juno Dawson always says is like, you can't fight Rita Ora. It's like her, you can't fight City Hall. You can't fight.
She comes back. You know, it's like, I will not be surprised if one day it's Rita Ora MP.
Literally. Like, someday, Chancellor. Like, our grandchildren are going to ask us when Rita Ora is on her world tour, being like, what is she famous for? And we're like, we don't know.
No. Yeah, world tour of what? Yeah.
World tour of what? But to me, America's Next Top Model was this show that really existed on the sort of intersection of beauty and yucky.
Yes, exactly.
And the episode... The arc that I think of the most was Michelle.
Oh, yeah. Michelle, season 4.
Cycle 4.
Excuse me. I'm so sorry. Cycle 4 was also, if I'm right, the We Were All Rooting For You season.
Oh, my God. You're right.
Yeah, with Tiffany, where she was like, learn something from this. Yeah.
Iconic season on that. So Michelle was like, they always have the sort of...
More masculine...
Wah, wah.
Yeah. And they like who they then like ridicule
totally.
For their masculinity.
And they keep pushing through because yeah. they're it just good
but like,
TV.
But she takes an amazing photo.
It's like, does she? Because she's unbelievably unhappy yeah. because of how we're treating her. So Michelle, they were like, she was a female wrestler. They sort of like, I feel like every time she walked into set, it was like the score was like, do-do-do-do-do-do. And they gave her the worst fucking peroxide dye job I've ever seen. It was so yellow.
It was really yellow.
It was like her whole head looked like something on Sandra Lee's YouTube page. Like, I remember yellow.
I remember when they were bleaching it. It's all coming back to me now. She was in an extraordinary amount of pain.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And they were like,
how badly do you want this? How badly do you want this? And it's like...
But that was it. That was like the makeover was so... That episode, which everybody... Even if you didn't really follow the show, people would always tune in for the makeover episode.
Yeah, of course.
Because it would be like either taking out someone's weave, putting in someone's weave, sort of bleaching someone's hair, putting them through extraordinary pain, watching them cry. Like it was like a very fluidy, gross, weird thing to do to these beautiful girls. But she got... What did she get? She got a skin condition.
I think it was impetigo.
Impetigo. And just kind of like psoriasis a little bit on her face.
And they were like, oh my God, Michelle has a flesh-eating bacteria. And all the girls are suddenly avoiding her. She's really stressed out. I was saying earlier, like, I would not be surprised if Tyra used a Q-tip and put the impetigo in Michelle's pillow herself. Because they were like, that this will make great TV. But it was like the way that it was handled on the show
was so shaming.
It's very humiliating. And I think that show had a special knack of, again, engendering our own fears of our own yuckiness in us through the way it just humiliated women. How do you, I do think, and, you know, I look at the stuff that our generation endured growing up and just think that like, well, these things just, I know because I witnessed it, experienced all of it. It created a generation of eating disorders.
Yeah.
And, you know, there feels like there's been no penance. And
there's been no penance that we need like a Nuremberg for these people.
Send her to the International Criminal Court ASAP.
Send her to The Hague.
But, you know, I was thinking, because I didn't grow up in the UK, I grew up in Hong Kong and Malaysia, and so my diet of television was, like, more American reality TV. Mm-hmm. And it's only been, you know, since moving to the UK, sort of 12 years ago now, that I've learned a lot more about, like, British reality TV.
Yes.
And that is the craziest shit I've ever seen in my life. In preparation for this, I, like, watched a compilation of Fat Families, hosted by Steve Miller, and I took down some quotes. One of them was, I'm in Luton, Bedfordshire, and about to meet three right jelly belly jumbos. Watch out, Butter Mountains. I'm coming to melt you.
Oh my God.
Watch out,
it's
massive
not
fatties.
Funny, but like,
the Lard police are in town. It's absolutely shocking
it's
that this
shocking.
Is just what we were brought up with and yet expected to not feel completely ashamed. And then also, you know, what shame often does when we can't speak about it and can't be open about the things that we're struggling with is that we turn that that loathing we have for ourselves outwards and, you know, we shame other people. And so it just becomes this like very self-reinforcing, scary, toxic culture that we just have to live in.
I do think that like so much of that era, like I'm guessing we're talking sort of like 2001, 2005. Yeah. I mean,
but even to like late noughties though.
Yeah.
That was like when the Embarrassing Bodies episode I watched, the earlier one, that was still like
2010. It was an onslaught. Yeah. It was like if someone wasn't being like shamed for being too fat, it was like for being a benefit fraud or being too drunk and tacky or something. It was just so shameful. But I also think there was something in it that was all about like how much can we take, you know? Because it was also the advent of like internet and like rotten.com and like all these like, I don't know, getting access to like normal people like watching, like getting pictures of like crime scenes and things. And like it just became all about, and humor got much more nastier as well.
Yeah,
and
really
like how,
nasty.
Yeah. And like, I don't know, I'm sometimes I'm reticent to like throw all of it out because I'm on another podcast soon and we're doing In Bruges, which is like one of my favorite movies.
I've never watched it. Can you give me a...
It's really fun. Like it's a fun movie, you know. It's a like a... It was also very important to me as an Irish person because it's like Irish people doing fun, cool stuff, like an Irish Pulp Fiction, you know? But there's like, unequivocally, there's nasty jokes in it. Like, it's mean-spirited in many ways. And I do think that, like, some, I don't know, there's a place in our world for mean-spirited, yucky jokes as a kind of attention release. But then I don't really know what to do with that because I know why people laugh at them, and you don't have to be a nasty person to laugh at a nasty joke.
Yeah.
But do we throw out all nasty jokes?
Yeah, with something like America's Next Top Model, I think it's like such an interesting cultural artifact. And I'm like glad that we can now watch it.
Yes.
With like the knowledge that this was totally absurd. You know, a bit more cognizant of the tricks that producers pull to create.
Yes.
You know, an unreality reality.
Yes.
And so it's hard to be like, oh, bin it, we can't watch it. And I would never say that. But
no,
you know,
but
I feel so grateful for the awareness.
Yes.
And, you know, I think when I was looking, and, you know, I don't think all of it's gone, obviously. You know, I just talked about how girls on TikTok are now worried about hip dips. So it's obviously not gone. And I think social media has proliferated a whole new way in which we can feel insecure about our bodies. But I am glad that at least that, you know, side of television has improved.
Yes.
Even though there are now new demons.
There are now...
New dragons we gotta slay.
Yeah. The one thing why I can't figure out whether it's a dragon or a...
What else?
What's an opposite of a dragon? A knight?
Yes.
Is Naked Attraction. You haven't seen it, but it's essentially, for anyone who doesn't know, it is a dating show... A very camp dating show where the people behind these screens are naked and they are revealed from the feet up.
Yeah.
So you see them from like the knee down first, and then look, they've got interesting calves. Oh, that guy, you know, has a prosthetic or whatever. Interesting. And then you go up and you eventually see like their genitals, and then they see their chest, and then you see their face last. And every time it seems to be every time I'm in a hotel room, it's on. It's one of those shows. Every time I watch it, I cannot for the life of me figure out how I feel about it.
Yeah, but it can also be both the dragon
and the knight.
Yeah, a dragon in knight's armor. But, you know, I think there's... Yeah, I've not seen it, but I've seen clips. Like, I've seen clips. I've never sat down to watch a full episode. So I do know that a lot of the bodies are sort of, you know, representative of what, you know, a quote-unquote average body may look like. And I think that is refreshing to see. You know, I do think that it's really interesting now looking at the way in which Girls, the show by Lena Dunham, is being rewatched. And it obviously has lots of problems around class and race. But one thing that's very interesting looking back is just to see, oh, it was so many people shamed Lena Dunham for her body and her really open approach to nudity and sex scenes, particularly in that when that first season of Girls was released. But I'm like, no, it was actually just really nice to see a woman who wasn't sort of a model-sized actress.
And that was a show that was heavily invested in yuckiness as well.
Yes, exactly.
Like, that, I think of that finale with her, the earbud, cotton bud in her ear.
Yeah.
Which is, I just think that was so, that entire arc of Hannah and her OCD spiral and breakdown, and what that ends with her sort of, and like, she, you know, she gets this, the phraseology always sticks in my head where she says, I just wanted to clean out. I really want, she gets fixated on just like getting everything out of her.
Yeah.
Which I think, you know, on some level, even if you haven't been on an OCD spiral, you can kind of relate to what she means
definitely.
When she says that.
Yeah.
She goes to the A&E to get it removed. She asks to keep it with, and you can see the sort of tipped with blood and everything.
Yeah.
Which is also very yucky. And then she's sort of just wandering down the street, bleary eyed, like wearing kind of a big t-shirt, holding this like plastic sandwich baggie with her earbud.
Yeah.
It's like the yuckiest but saddest and most impactful thing.
But because of that, very human. And I think there's like something which felt quite humanizing about a show like Girls because of its openness with respect to the body. And I wonder if something like Naked Attraction maybe tries, or rather attempts at the same kind of openness. Maybe, you know, and maybe that's the knight of Naked Attraction, and maybe the dragon of Naked Attraction is that you still have someone reducing whether they want to date someone entirely on their
body.
Impression of their body.
Yes.
And so maybe inhabits both.
Yes. And I think the spirit of how the show is being made is very like, you know, Graham Norton before he was famous. Remember that late night Channel 4? You probably weren't in the country, so I'm not sure if you've seen it, but like it was very like, look, I found this giant dildo online,
right.
And now we're going to crank call Joan Rivers. You know, that was it was very anarchic and silly and very bodily, and people would come on and tell their shit stories kind of thing. And I think Naked Attraction was probably created in that sort of anarchic spirit, but that does not allow for the kind of contestants. And so you sort of see these women and their fannies, and like it's like, and you see sort of that they've shaved, and you see the stubble, and you see stretch marks and ingrown hair, and you're like, I am never going to see this anywhere else on television.
Yeah.
And I do like that I'm seeing it, and they have trans contestants on as well.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I was like, wow, I've never seen a naked trans man
mm-hmm.
on television, and where else am I? And that felt kind of amazing. But then you also have like these guys who are like, you know, someone gets revealed and they've got like a chubby belly, and they kind of go, I'm going to get rid of number four. And you still watch that happen. So I don't, jury's out.
It kind of feels like maybe halfway there when it gets the, when it gets the embarrassing bodies revamp.
Yes.
Maybe it'll improve.
Yeah. But how do you, I don't know.
Oh, it was so funny.
Like, how do we get those enlightened contestants that we can find?
Yeah. When we were messaging about this podcast, I shared a picture of my TV when I was looking up embarrassing bodies, and there was a show called Embarrassing Pets.
Yes. What's on Embarrassing Pets?
It's like, oh, leave that poor like shih tzu alone. Like it doesn't even know what shame is.
No, it doesn't know what shame is. Leave it alone.
It's so funny.
Although I have to say, like, I have a little dog, and
oh, does it feel ashamed?
I actually do think she has a real grasp on shame.
Oh.
I know.
That's so sad.
But she's had, like, do you have any pets?
No, I don't.
I feel like my yucky valve does get released, because she is one of these little white dogs that always has eye problems. You know? And it's just like there's always
like
something.
Like that, like, streak of, like,
eye
gunk.
Streak. Yeah. Perma streak of eye gunk. You know, I've got to sort of, like, in summer I'll have to extract ticks from her. You know, it's all that kind of thing. And it would be too much to say I enjoy it, but I don't hate it either.
Yeah, no, there's, like, something about that kind of grooming.
Monkey grooming.
So much, like we were saying earlier, so much of grooming is to do with, like, yuckiness.
Yes.
And, like, you know, it was, like, a big intimate thing that me and my sisters used to do was like clean. So we didn't use Q-tips. We had this is again probably going to get some hate mail from some audiologists. Yeah. Don't do this. Is that we had this like tiny sort of gold stick with like a little scoop at the end.
Very luxe.
And from a young age, like my sister would like sit me down and just like look into my ear and just like scrape out earwax. And there's just like something very like caring about those things, doing those things for each other, and like exposing that like sort of quote unquote yucky part of yourself to someone else.
It's such a comfort thing. And like, also, have you ever been into like squeezing a partner's like spots or blackheads on their back or anything?
Yeah, like always. Yeah.
Always. It is like, whenever you see women being like, why date men? It's like, because they have the best blackheads. Because all they do is wash with their 7-in-1 wash, and then their shoulder blades are just covered in like soapy gel that you can push out.
Oh my god! I was at my sister's house, and my sister lives in one of my sisters lives in Lisbon, and there was they had a bath product in the bathroom that was a 24-in-1. And it was like all in German, so I couldn't understand. But all I could see was 24-in-1.
You can clean your house. Oh my god, that's so German.
Yeah.
My favorite sort of genre of pimple popping videos that isn't Dr. Sandra Lee herself is you'll see these kind of homemade ones that are always like a male relative by the pool in Spain. Yes. And you can so tell what's happened is that like a bunch of women have been on the loungers and they've watched their dad get into the pool and they've been like, Dad, come over here. You have something and we want to film it. I love it.
I love it. Another, I like something which has been typed into the search bar so many times for me is longest ingrown hair ever. I just always want to see the coil.
Would you say that would be like, if this is Desert Island Discs and you can only take one yucky thing?
I'd take a dilated pool of wine, I think. Yeah.
Me too.
Yeah. I think I just find the plug vibe very satisfying.
Yeah. That sort of removing the sort of the coaly sort of thing.
And you're sort of wiggling it out. You know, they have to do a bit of anesthetic because it's quite painful, but then you just sort of grip it and sort of twist it out. There's something so satisfying and clean about something like that.
Yeah, whereas for me, cysts, I don't get much out of it all now.
I think they're less. Sometimes I like it when, and you know, Dr. Sandra Lee is very good at this. Is when she manages to push it in a way where like the sac comes out with the inside, and there's like no popping.
It's like a birth. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, oh yes, it is. It's like a birth. A little alien.
A little alien. And then sometimes they weigh it afterwards. A childhood friend of mine is now an ear, nose and throat doctor.
Okay.
And so he was very impressed. That's not my son. I only see him every few years because he lives in Ireland. And
for your checkup.
He's never looked at my... I feel like that would be a
boundary crossed. Yeah. Unless it was an emergency.
But I do ask him a lot about what comes in. And he was like, oh, fucking 4 times a year, some woman will come in convinced she has an earring back in her ear canal. I find that fascinating that so many women have got this in their heads, this sort of like fixation.
I was convinced I had a blockage. To be honest, quite similar to what Hannah and Girls goes through.
Really?
Where like I just couldn't stop cleaning my ear. I got like so many solutions, was constantly
doing
it.
Oh my God.
And yeah, I've sort of struggled with OCD since I was quite young. Not really anymore. But it wasn't until my mum constantly saw me clear my ear that she finally really understood what was going on. But I think we can really have this sense of paranoia about things in our bodies. It's scary.
It is scary. It's so strange. I always fixate on my ears when I'm anxious as well. I just always like fiddle with them or I'm, you know.
I'm always like playing with the lobe.
Yeah. Or if there's like, this is gross because I fiddle with my sort of ear area so often, a sort of like crop of little blackheads has like grown up behind them, and so it's like my little farm.
Save it for a rainy day.
Exactly. So gross. Before we end, I wanted to bring up that there was actually a yucky anthem that has come out in the last few years.
Oh yeah.
Which I believe to be WAMP.
Like an embrace of like fun, loving fluids.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like for me, that was not the amazing thing about that song wasn't that like, oh, these two women are being hoary and they love big dick. It was like, no, they're talking about like their bodies and their fluids in this like really intense way, like comparing the sound to macaroni in a pot.
Yeah, I love it. I think it's like they did it so, I mean, it like really, I came out at the perfect time as well.
Yeah.
Where we were sort of at home and...
Oh, it was a pandemic song, wasn't it?
It was a pandemic song. It's actually about the pandemic.
because she talks about having that, touch that like dangling thing at the back of my throat.
Oh, yes.
And because of COVID tests, we were also familiar with the dangly bit at the back of my throat.
She was referring to the
PCR
COVID
test.
Yes. Yeah. She was talking about a swab.
Yeah, like, and I remember the debate being like, well, you know, men talk about sexual, like, you know, hip hop artists talk about women's sexual. Yeah. Like, no, that's not what we should be talking about. What we're talking about is that they're reveling in how gross they are. And it's a big moment for us.
Or like, they're reveling in something which, again, people sometimes feel like weird and ashamed about and unable to talk about.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's sort of just often a necessary and like fun part of life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now we just need a queef anthem and we're there. Feminism
and a poo,
solved.
And like a poo anthem. Like there's, I can't think of a poo anthem.
A celebratory
at least one that,
poo
at least
anthem.
One that I'm listening to.
Musicians, if you're out there. Cardi B, if you're out there. Okay, I think we've covered
Oh my God. Like, oh, hey soul sister.
Hey, soul sister.
Hey, soul sister.
This is how I'll address you when I run into you at literary events from now on. Is there anything else on the yucky agenda that you are were keen to cover before we close off?
I think we did a really...
I'm really proud of
a
us.
A really comprehensive look at yuckiness. I'm looking at our Google Doc. Basically everything I got to list all those quotes I saw in Fat Families, I'm still astonished by. And, you know, yeah, I feel quite satisfied. I was a bit worried. I was like, oh, am I going to run out of things to talk about?
Yeah.
But I think I could go another 2 hours if left to my own devices.
It's always tough with subjects like this to not know when you end up talking around things for a while. But I feel like a great cyst or spot bobbing video, we've really gotten in there.
Yes, exactly.
We've extracted.
Sack intact.
Sack intact. So Nicola Dynan, you're a novelist. Your first novel, Bellies, is out at the moment and is very celebrated. Would you like to tell us a little bit about it?
So Bellies is about two characters, Tom and Ming. Tom is, you know, your typical South London soft boy. He loves Mark Fisher. He thinks he's a socialist. And Ming is this very effervescent playwright from Malaysia. And they meet at university and fall very quickly in love, as you do when you're 20. But when they move to London to start the next phase of their lives after graduation, Ming comes out as trans, and suddenly the couple have to confront what that means for them, particularly Tom, who, you know, is a gay man and doesn't really know if he wants to be with a woman or if he can even be with a woman. And so these questions loom over them as, you know, they're in this very tumultuous early 20s period trying to figure out who they are and also who, you know, who they love.
It's also just really funny. Like, I've not finished it yet. I started over Christmas and then I got deadline sidelined. But it's just like, I love how just much of a simpleton Tom is.
Yeah.
Out of 5, how would you rate the yuckiness of Bellies?
It depends on how you see yucky, but I think it's about 2 to 3.
Okay. Yeah. Healthy. Great.
Yeah. What about the Rachel incident?
I think the Rachel incident is my least yucky adult book. I think my first one had a lot of body horror. Second one had that poo scene. And I'm trying to think of any major yuckiness. There's a kind of a kink scene with a knife people are very interested in.
Interesting.
That's more of a sex thing. We actually didn't talk about pornography and how yuckiness bleeds into that. But maybe that can be a sequel.
But I think that's just, you know, an extension of what we were talking about, like being able to indulge in taboos that we otherwise feel ashamed about.
Yeah.
You know, all of the negatives of and exploitation, you know, in pornography aside, I do think it maybe what draws people to those things is, you know, an inability to express it elsewhere.
Yeah, when does yuck become kink?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, we'll leave
not
that
for
with
us.
You.
Not yeah. for
us. We're normal. Yeah. And Pink's new single, Everybody's a Freak. We'll be out now. In a Spanish taxi near you. Thank you, Nicola.
Thank you.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.